Hi, this is David. I've started a few small businesses over the years, including this podcast, and the situation is always the same. Every day another urgent task pops up and your to-do list is never-ending. Shopify wasn't around when I got started as an entrepreneur, but I wish it had been, because it would have made my life a whole lot easier. How so? Well, with Shopify, you have instant access to hundreds of templates that make building an online store easy. Not just a beautiful storefront, but one that converts visitors into paying customers. Shopify is also packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even improve your product photography. It's like you have a full marketing team behind you, not to mention tools for managing inventory, international shipping, processing returns, and a whole lot more. If you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/inspirational. Go to shopify.com/inspirational. shopify.com/inspirational. Welcome to the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from The Blessing of Cheerfulness by James Russell Miller, published in 1895. There are many ways in which we may bless others. For example, a ministry of helpfulness is a perpetual benediction. One who feeds the hungry, visits and relieves the sick, the poor and the orphan, and comforts sorrow, is a blessing to the world. One who uses their money to do good is also a blessing. But can one be a blessing merely by being cheerful? Yes. Joyful living exerts a silent influence for good. It is like a sweet flower by the wayside, which has a benediction for all who pass by. Everyone carries an atmosphere about them. It may be healthful and invigorating, or it may be unwholesome and depressing. It may make a little spot of the world a sweeter, better, safe place to live in, or it may make it harder for those to live worthily and beautifully who dwell within its circle. We are responsible for this atmosphere. Our influence may be involuntary in its final effect. We cannot wholly change it from evil to good on any particular day by a mere volition. It is something that belongs to our personality. It is an emanation from our character. And our character is the growth of all our years, what has been built up in us by all the lessons, experiences, impressions and influences of life from childhood. Hence, the atmosphere that hangs about us on any particular day is in a large degree involuntary. At the same time, we are responsible for it. We are responsible for our character. Our own hands have made it what it is. If we have trained ourselves to be discontented and unhappy, so that wherever we go we make others about us less happy, we may not blame heredity, or original sin, or environment for our unfortunate disposition. No doubt natural tendency or early influences may make it harder for a person to be sweet-spirited and sunny-tempered, but because it is hard to be good, because there is much to overcome, one need not give up the endeavor as useless and unavailing. Cheerfulness, therefore, is a duty. Most have not thought of it in this way. We often regard it as a pleasant disposition. We consider the happy personality as naturally cheerful, and do not put it among our duties as we do truthfulness, honesty, patience, and kindness. But it is indeed our duty to make others happy, as best we can. No day should pass where we do not put a little cheer into some discouraged heart. Make the path a little smoother for someone's tired feet, or help some fainting robin unto its nest again. This is noble and right. And while we cannot put too great emphasis upon the duty of giving happiness and cheer to others, it is no less a duty that we should be happy and cheerful ourselves. It was Jesus himself who said, "Be of good cheer." He said it in one way or another many times. He counseled his followers against anxiety. He showed his friends an example of cheerfulness. Some people have the impression that Jesus was a sad man. He was indeed a man of sorrows, but his face was always radiant with the light of inner joy. He never cast a shadow on any other life. His life was full of cheer. No one ever felt depressed from coming into his presence. Be of good cheer. It is the privilege of everyone who seeks the higher life to be of good cheer, no matter what the circumstances of your life may be. Privilege makes duty. We ought always to be cheerful. We ought to carry music in our heart and the light of joy in our face wherever we go, in whatever experiences we find ourselves in. The fact is, however, that few of us are cheerful at all times, in all circumstances. Some are scarcely ever cheerful, are indeed habitually uncheerful. Others are cheerful at times, when the sun shines, while all things go well with them, but the light flies out of their faces when clouds gather and storms rise. How can we learn to be of good cheer even in times of sorrow and trouble? For one thing, we must remember that cheerfulness has to be learned. It does not come naturally. We all have to learn the lessons of beautiful living. Life is a school, and God is continually setting new lessons before us. When we find ourselves facing some unpleasant duty, or in the presence of a new trial or sorrow, we should not forget that it is another lesson being set before us. If it is hard to do, that shows it is a lesson we have not yet perfectly learned. We must not be discouraged if cheerfulness is not easy for us. We have to learn it, and it may take us a good while. It will help us in learning the lesson of cheerfulness if we persistently train ourselves to see the good things, the bright things, in our common life. There are some people who seem to have eyes only for the unpleasant things. They find every bit of roughness and hardness in their daily path. They see at once, and see it magnified, every disagreeable thing that comes into their life. They remember all the unhappy experiences they have ever had. They keep on their heart's walls the pictures of all their vanished joys and faded hopes. They write with a diamond on their window panes the records of all the trials, adversities, and misfortunes they have ever suffered. But on the other hand, they forget all their blessings, They hang up no pictures of joys which have filled their life on so many bright days. They have no memory for the beautiful things, the things of gladness. There are few habits more common than this habit of remembering the unpleasant things and forgetting the pleasant things. And there is no other habit which is more harmful to joy. If you aspire always to be of good cheer, you must break this habit, if it has fastened itself to your life, and must learn, must train yourself to see the beautiful things and to be blind to the disagreeable things. The truth is, there are in the ordinary life 1,000 pleasant things, favors, joys, comforts, things to cheer, to one unpleasant thing, one real cause for unhappiness. It is a shame, therefore, to let the one bit of roughness, trial or suffering, spoil all the gladness of the 1,000 blessings, to let the one discordant note mar all the music of the grand symphony. We should learn to look at life not to find misery and discomfort in it, but to find cheer and beauty. 2 people in the same house, looking out the same windows, on the same things, will see things in such different ways that one shall be made unhappy and wretched, while the other is made to rejoice and sing. For example, let me tell you a story about a woman I knew. She moved into a new apartment, which was not conspicuous for its cheerful surroundings or its pleasant outlook. The average person would have felt it to be rather small and unremarkable. But this woman was happy in her home. One day a friend called and was asked by this cheerful lady to note the pleasant view she had from her window. "Yes," said the visitor rather sarcastically, "I see a remarkably fine lot of chimneys and run-down buildings." "Chimneys and buildings!" exclaimed her friend. "Why, I never saw them before. I looked over all that you see and saw those magnificent trees which form such a picturesque line on the horizon. I thought only of the trees and the glorious sunsets I see from this window." This woman had learned one of the secrets of being of good cheer. She had trained herself to see out of her windows trees and sunsets, instead of dingy roofs, black chimney tops, and unsightly buildings. This habit made all the world beautiful for her. She always saw loveliness whenever she looked out. She was blind to the unpleasant sights which some people can find everywhere, even in a garden of flowers or a gallery of paintings. The individual who has learned to see the beauty even in unsightly things, the good in evil things, the encouragement in discouraging things, the comfort in painful things, has found one of the truest and most potent secrets of cheerfulness. Such a habit always finds something bright in the dreariest condition. Another secret of cheerfulness is found in the way we relate ourselves to the people about us. There are many people who are made miserable by what others do or do not do. Their neighbor's faults worry them a great deal, far more than their own. The things they hear about others vex them. The peculiarities of their friends and their shortcomings cause them great annoyance. The way other people treat them, their bad manners, their lack of respect, their thoughtless ways, these disagreeable things give them much distress. Of course, we cannot be indifferent to what we see in the lives about us. A sensitive spirit is affected by whatever passes before it. In a home, the life of each child continually gives either comfort or pain to a parent's heart. Our close friends and acquaintances add either to our pleasure or our sorrow by the way they live. A sympathetic heart carries the burdens and griefs of many lives. However, there is a way in which all of this may be made to add to life's cheerfulness. If we look upon others critically, to mark their faults, to judge them, to think and say severe things of them, we only make ourselves wretched, while we do them no good, only harm instead. But if we look at others with accepting and loving eyes, then even the things in them which cause us pain and sorrow become new chances of joy and blessing for us. People are meant to be means of grace to us. We are to be helped by our contacts with them. From some we are to learn, through the beautiful things in them, their excellence of character. From these we get inspiration. Others help us through our sympathies. They appeal to our thought and care. They need help. We must carry burdens for them. They have sorrows, and it befits us to give them comfort. They are in need or distress, and we must deny ourselves for them. The blessing that may come to us through these is without measure. Every human sorrow or infirmity that makes its appeal to us is a new chance for us to do a beautiful thing, to grow in character and love. Every new burden of care rolled upon us, demanding self-denial, sacrifice, or service, carries in it a new blessing for us, if only we accept it. Nothing else in all life is such a maker of joy and cheer as the privilege of doing good. Someone once said, "If I had to choose my place among the forces of nature, do you know what I would choose to be? I would be the dew that falls silently and invisibly over the face of nature, trampled underfoot and unconsidered, but perpetually blessing and refreshing all forms of life." It is in such losing of the self that we find our truest, purest, and deepest happiness.